Welcome to Write Through the Roof, the podcast for writers who want to improve their craft. I'm Madeline Diest, and in this show, I'm interviewing writers of all different types and asking, what's that one thing that took your writing to the next level? So come and join me and learn all the proven tips, tricks, and techniques to take your writing right through the roof. And welcome to Write Through the Roof. Today I'm speaking with Sione Ashleman. Hi, Sione, how are you going?
Hi, Madeline. I'm really good. Thanks so much for having me on. I'm honored to be here.
Ah, not a problem whatsoever. A little bit of background about Sione. She is an editor, writing coach, and writer from Portland, Oregon. She's a former college writing instructor, and she's also a participating editor in the Revise and Resubmit contest, also known as #RevPit. She writes prose and poetry in all kinds of genres, and you can find her creative writing in Inaccurate Realities, Fear, Voice Catcher, and Ugly Babies, Volume 2. Thanks for coming on the show, Sione.
Thank you, Madeline. I'm looking forward to it.
Excellent. Okay, so how I like to start off, I like to, you know, warm up a bit, you know, do a bit of toe touches and kind of star jumps before we start. So I'm just going to ask you a few quick questions to get to know you a bit better. So, are you a plotter or a pantser?
I tend to be more on the pantser end of the spectrum, but it does depend on what I'm writing to some extent. For example, when I'm writing short stories or short creative nonfiction pieces, I'm a pantser all of the way. But when I'm writing novels, I find that it helps significantly if I have a few of the major plot points in mind. So I tend to do a little more plotting when I'm writing novels.
Great. So, but are they fairly minor, your plotting for a novel? Do you still prefer to just kind of fly by the seat of your pants?
There's a lot of flying by the seat of my pants. I tend to know where it begins, where the story begins, and where it's going to end up, roughly. And then I try to think about the second inciting incident and the resolution. And then everything else sort of unfolds as I do my discovery draft, what Anne Lamott calls a shitty first draft.
Oh, yeah, I'm very familiar with those.
They're necessary for me. I can't do without them.
I think that's the only way I can write myself.
I think it's really hard to, for some of us, it's really hard to know what you're going to write until you've written it. And that's the same. It was the same for me in school with essays. I had the hardest time outlining in preparation for writing an essay. I always had to cheat and write the essay and then do the outline afterward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. Okay. So you write poetry, short stories, novels. So what's your favorite medium?
I mean, if you're going to make me pick, I would say short form. I really like writing prose poems. I've been working a lot, though, on I write flash fiction mainly. So that's probably my favorite, just because they're a sprint rather than a marathon. And so there's a quicker payoff. They're done sooner, in theory.
So what's prose poetry? How do you define that?
Prose poetry is written in paragraph form. It tends to be quite short. And then it draws a lot of elements from poetry, the lyrical phrasing, and might have a lot of internal rhyming. And it's more focused on images and capturing moments rather than telling a story, complete story.
Okay, great. All right, so one last short question. So do you have a writing fuel of choice?
Oh, yes. It's funny, I've noticed and I've taken pictures of it. When I'm writing, I tend to have three beverages going on at the same time. Okay. Water, obviously. Yeah. coffee or tea, some sort of caffeine, and then like a glass of wine or a beer or something like that. If it's a really hard riding day, I might upgrade to brandy or tequila, but that's rare. But if it's editing work, you know that Hemingway, the write drunk, edit sober saying. Yeah. So I don't write drunk, but I take a similar approach. When it comes to editing my work or other people's work, it's just coffee all the way.
So you've got the three lined up, have you?
Yeah, well, in a triangle, really. So I don't have to stretch too far to reach any of them.
Sip of, let's just say one's hot and a couple are cold.
Yeah, exactly. I need variety in my life.
The beverage triangle.
I'm going to start calling it that.
Excellent. Okay, well, I think we've got to know you a little bit more now. So let's get a bit more in depth. So I've already asked you a little bit about your prose poetry and what it is, but how do you describe your writing and what themes do you like to explore?
So in terms of what I write, I would say weird prose poetry, short speculative fiction, romance novels, and then every so often I'll write some angsty creative nonfiction because we all need an outlet for our angst, right? In terms of themes, I've thought about this a little bit. I think what most of my work keeps coming back to is people, the same thing that I struggle with in real life, trying to be my whole true self without fear or shame. And so my characters tend to be striving for that, strive to live within their value system and keep butting up against social constructs and social norms that don't tend to or seem to support how living comes naturally to them, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
That's really interesting. This is the first time in one of these interviews that anyone has actually related it back to themselves when I asked that question. So I find that really interesting because I think that's the way that most of my themes for my writing relates to me personally as well. So it's interesting to hear you say that.
Yeah, I think in some form or another, everything that we write, I mean, you can only write what you know. And so there's a bit of us in all of our characters. And it's just a matter of taking a step back and seeing what those patterns are and recognizing it's the same stuff that we'd struggle with in real life.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Cool. Okay, so the key question. So what's the one thing that's been most helpful in improving your writing?
I've listened to some of your other shows, which are your other episodes, which are excellent, by the way.
Thank you.
And yeah. And I've heard some of your other guests talk about continuous learning. And so I agree with that. And I've noticed in my own development, there have been several benchmarks. But I think one of the things that has been the most helpful to me is an attitude toward feedback. I think that approaching both praise and constructive criticism with curiosity has been incredibly helpful in learning what actually works for readers, learning what their expectations are and what doesn't meet them and how you can set up different expectations than maybe the conventions normally allow for. And it's hard because, of course, when somebody says, you know, that they really like such and such, that I feel really good about that. And I want to bask in that warm, tingly fuzziness that I get from hearing that somebody really connected with my work. And on the other side of it, when someone really doesn't connect with my work and maybe feels a little angry about something, it's, you know, I have feelings about that too. On both ends, once I get past the immediacy of my emotional response to the feedback, digging in and really thinking about and asking questions about why they're having the reactions that they're having, whether positive or negative, that's really been the basis for a lot of my learning.
Okay. And with your, because you're a writing coach, with your own clients, how do you help them get that attitude towards feedback? Because I'm sure that's quite problematic. You would have, every person would react a different way.
Yeah, well, in terms of my editing work, I really strive to not only, I mean, you have to start with feedback as a reader. Here's the effect that what I'm reading has. And then I don't stop there. I go beyond and talk about why that effect is taking place and what some of the potential solutions for that are. And that tends to be really helpful to my clients.
Do you find that, it's a journey with some of them though, to get through that, get to the point where they can appreciate some of the more constructive elements of the feedback?
Yeah, everybody's different. Some people tend to be able to process their feelings pretty quickly and turn around and have a conversation, and that focuses on the underlying issues. But other people need a little more time to process and their feelings and have all of the reactions of grief. What is it? Seven stages. Or something like that. And that's completely normal. And so I'm strategic about when I plan my follow-up calls with clients. I make sure to give them at least a week to process, and if they need more time, they can have it.
So in terms of that, going into the why something doesn't work or suggesting possible solutions. How did you go about, because in my previous episode that I just released, I was talking about reading critically. So do you have any tips for how to improve that in terms of understanding what could be changed and helping people there?
You mean how we can use reading other people's work critically to learn things for our own work?
Yeah,
actually, I find that my writing has improved greatly since I've started editing, for just that reason, because I'm constantly in the position of having to articulate what is going on for me as a reader, and actually make explicit what my expectations were going in based on the genre and the age category and based on the, you know, the first 5 pages or the first 50 pages or what have you. So when it comes to reading other people's work, I think it's a little bit of a time consuming process, but really worthwhile. If as you read, you go through and make notes of the reactions that you're having as you go through, and then you can come back to it and examine the writing and the storytelling elements like structure, characterization, things like that, to find out what was it that created that response in you. What was it that delighted you, was unexpected, or that really resonated or felt satisfying because it met your expectations? And what was it that didn't resonate with you because perhaps the pacing of the plot was off or because the character seemed inconsistent, things like that. Is that kind of what you meant?
Yeah, that's exactly what I meant. Because, yes, I'm going through that process now of trying to learn that and not get too caught up in the story, especially if I'm reading like a published book as compared to critiquing someone else's. But, yeah, to actually look to see why I like something. And, yeah, so those tips are really helpful.
Yeah, and I think I don't know if you've heard of DIY MFA, that Gabriella – I'm sorry, I can't pronounce it. Perea maybe is her last name. Have you heard of it?
No, I haven't.
It's just DIYMFA.com. And basically the whole point behind the project is how to give yourself an MFA education without actually going through an MFA program. Mm. And many of the resources are about just what we're talking about, how to read for craft.
Oh, fantastic. All right. Well, make a note of that. Excellent. So are you trying anything new at the moment yourself?
Yeah, the biggest thing that I've been working on for the past, several years, really ramping up my understanding of storytelling, because I have a master's degree in English and my undergrad was in English also. And so, as you can imagine, I did a lot of writing. And so I have a lot of practice in writing for various purposes and various audiences and working on word choice and flow and clarity and things like that. So I feel like my skills there, they could always be improved, but they're pretty solid. What I wasn't taught in college was about structure of a novel in particular, is what I'm thinking about right now. And so that's one of the things that I've really had my eye on and have been learning a lot from my clients' work and from my reactions to my clients' work. And so now I'm working on applying that to the novel I'm currently writing, which is a historical pirate romance.
Awesome.
And I'm finding that, it's difficult because writing is hard. But I'm so much happier with how this book is turning out compared to my previous novels. I just feel like my writing has grown by leaps and bounds because of this work that I've been doing around structure.
Can you give us an example?
One of the things that that I had a terrible time with, and I think a lot of writers have a terrible time with, is beginnings. what that first 5 pages or 10 pages should include, and just how to set up the story in a way that doesn't front load a lot of exposition, a lot of backstory and character information. That's and just starting in an engaging scene. So that's something I've been working on. I've gotten a little bit better each time, but really this one that I'm working on now, I think like things have finally started to click into place, and I have a much better understanding of what needs to go in those pages, in part because I've read so many first 5 pages by doing contests like RevPit, for example.
And we'll get to RevPit a bit later on. Okay, so when you're reading, what writers inspire you?
So many, for so many different reasons. But I think I draw a lot of my inspiration from writers like Margaret Atwood and Ursula Le Guin. I really like literary speculative fiction, really admire their writing styles, and also the fact that they're writing about things that resonate deeply with me in this, in my life, in this period of time, I guess, when I'm talking about politically, socially, all of these things. I really like Alexander Weinstein had a book of short near future spec fic stories come out, I think it was 2016, called Children of the New World. And it was hands down the best collection of short stories I've read in a long time. I so admire him. I want to be him when I grow up, except me. So I admire his work a lot. And then I also am greatly influenced, not just in my prose poetry, but also in my short speculative fiction, by prose poets like James Tate and Russell Edson, who are just playful and weird and mix humor with really striking and memorable imagery, and that also carries with it some deep feelings. They're a bit like Charles Simic in that respect. I really like them.
Cool. Okay, so we just mentioned RevPit a minute ago. So can you tell us a little bit more about RevPit and how that works?
Yeah, it's a community started by a group of editors that I'm teamed up with and whom I love and adore. And it started as an annual contest last year because the organizer for Pitched a Publication, which a lot of us had been involved in up to that point, had some things going on in her life and sort of at the last minute found herself unable to follow through with Pitched a Publication in 2017. So we had already blocked out the time and decided, well, let's do this other thing. And we focused it more on the editing, whereas other contests like Pitch a Publication also had an agent round where revised pages were put in front of agents and small publishers. And I think that's really important. But the focus of Revise and Resub is really in the editing and the learning experiences. And we've worked really hard to make it a supportive and rich learning community in that respect. So we do an annual contest, which is actually coming up pretty soon. I'm not sure when this episode's going to air, but the submission window for this year opens on April 21st. And we have a lot of activities around that are designed to help people have successful submissions, as well as just learn more about their craft, like ask editor sessions. And we tweet 10 queries, which is anonymous feedback about some of our submissions. Anonymous because obviously we don't want to call anyone out, but it also is really helpful to people to see how we're reading other people's manuscripts and what some of the common problems are. And without fail, we get feedback that even when they know it's not about their submission, they're looking at their own submission for some of the same things that we've been talking about in other people's, like whether it starts an exposition, for example, or whether the main characters in the first, you know, five pages, things like that. So we do that annual contest. And the prize is that each of the editors choose one person to work with for free for 5 weeks on their manuscript, on the full manuscript. And so there's a lot of work involved for us, but it's also really rewarding and really fun because we get to hand pick something that really resonates with us and that we want to support its development and help it get out into the world and hopefully find an agent or a small press, depending on the author's goals for that.
So how do you enter?
You can go to reviseresub.com and we've got a lot of information there. And then on April 21st at 9 a.m. Eastern time, there will be a link that will take you to Submittable. Mm-hmm. And so you actually enter through Submittable and there's no fee. It's free to enter.
Excellent. I'm thinking about maybe joining in myself.
That would be awesome. with your current manuscript, something that you're querying?
Yeah. Something I'm querying that's not getting a lot of attention. So any help would be greatly appreciated.
That sounds perfect. I encourage you to do it. That'd be awesome.
Cool. Okay. So sounds like you're a busy woman. You got to get yourself prepared for the onslaught of manuscripts that you'll have if you're getting involved in this. So I'll start to wrap up. So what are you working on right now?
lots of things simultaneously. I'm a person who I tend to work on 4 or 5 projects at the same time, and for that reason, I'm incredibly slow. But I think probably somewhere in my deep subconscious, everything that I'm working on at the same time is marginally related, and so they sort of support each other. But I guess the two main things is I'm working on that historical pirate romance I told you about, which is I should say it's a romance that's set in a historical period. It's not about an actual historical figure, but there's a female pirate ship captain, and she and her crew come across a merchant ship captain who's about to die because his ship has got hung up on a reef and it's sinking. And they rescue him, and the merchant ship captain and the pirate ship captain do not get along, but eventually they fall in love, as they do. And then the other thing I'm working on is I talked a lot about structure today, and as you can tell, that's something that's at the forefront of my mind. So I'm actually working on a short ebook about structure that just had my own spin on it. I know there are a ton of really great books about structure out there already, but one of the things I'm trying to do with it is simplify it into what I would consider to be the most essential plot points. You read structure. Not or structure ideas that are, you know, 7 or 9 or 12 points. And I've really narrowed it down to the 5 that I think are the essential ones to hit. And the other thing that I'm really focusing on that not all structure books do is the pacing of the main plot points. Because that's something that I think a lot of people struggle with. Maybe they follow the hero's journey, Joseph Campbell's The Hero's Journey, but they're not really sure about when the different points should be happening in the book. And so the pacing of the book tends to be off, and that's something that I really want to address in my book.
Wow, that sounds really interesting. When do you expect to get that out in the world?
That is an excellent question.
Oops, have I put you on the spot?
No, it's fine. My hope, and you know how life goes, and I've already said I'm kind of a slow writer and I have bazillion things going on, but my hope is to have that come out early next year, so in 2019. Yeah.
Great. Okay, cool. Well, I'll let you get back to your beverage triangle and your bazillion things that you're working on. So where can people find you and your work if they want to get in touch?
Yeah, I would love to connect on Twitter. My Twitter handle is at writelearndream, RiteLearnDream. And they can also find me through my website, which is writelearndream.com.
Easy. Great. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today, Sione. It was really helpful, and so many things that you talked about I can see that would be really helpful to the listeners.
Thank you, Madeline. It was really fun. I really appreciate you having me on.
Week's interview, Sione briefly mentioned the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross stages of grieving, but she was talking about her clients' reactions to feedback. But I wanted to talk about the 5 stages of grieving model for developing character journeys. Now, the model was originally developed by Kubler-Ross, a psychiatrist, based on the emotional journey of terminally ill patients after receiving their diagnosis and bereaved relatives after a death. The classic Kubler-Ross model for the 5 stages of grieving is sometimes abbreviated to DABDA, and the 5 stages are denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. The stage I find most interesting to explore is the bargaining stage, where a person clings on to the hope that they can somehow change the outcome by making promises to change and bargaining with God or death. This 5-stage model has been expanded to cater for other changes in life, for example, overcoming addictions, and is particularly used in business management and organisational change in the workplace. There are various models used, but the main differences in the expanded model are anger is replaced by two stages of blame, blaming others and then blaming yourself. And one of the other key differences is a period of uncertainty, confusion and doubt. And the expanded change curve model also focuses more on the stages after accepting the change, when a person transitions onto problem solving and finally moving on. I find the expanded models useful because I feel that there's a lot of potential for character growth during the uncertainty, confusion and doubt phase. This is where my characters can delve deeper. When they know things have definitely changed, then there's no going back. They can either decide to do nothing and stay here riddled with doubt, or they can weigh up the changes and decide what to do next. Although, the story would be pretty boring if the main character decided to do nothing. The expanded model also aligns with many plot structures, because it's never the end of the story when the character accepts the change. This is usually the start of Act 3. So I encourage you to check out the Change Curve or the Kubler-Ross's 5 Stages of Grieving model to help you plot out your character's emotional journeys. Thanks for listening to Right Through the Roof. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe or spread the word by writing a review on your listening platform of choice. And if you'd like to get in contact with me, please go to madelinedst.com or madeline_dst on Twitter, no apostrophes. You can find the show notes for this episode on madelinedst.com under the Right Through the Roof tab. And until next time, what are you going to do to improve your writing this week?